I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, everybody. My name's Thomas Boff. I'm the editor of wolvesblog.com, a website dedicated entirely to Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. You can obviously find me at wolvesblog.com or on Twitter or X, as it's now known, at wolvesblog.
Hi, folks. My name is Steve McGugan. Thanks very much for having me back again, Kevin. I am a Spurs fan, currently based in Belfast in Northern Ireland. And in a previous life, I was the chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club.
Awesome. An absolute pleasure to have both of you back on, and a pleasure to be back. It's obviously been a few weeks with the holidays and everything like that, but glad to be back and talking Premier League with you two, and glad that the folks at home will have something to listen to on their end. I figure we should start off with what basically overtook all of social media yesterday, which was basically, did you know that Kevin De Bruyne is particularly good at football? Obviously, just had about a 20-minute cameo yesterday for Manchester City, came on when they were losing 2-1 to Newcastle, ended up having a goal and an assist, making it a 3-2 win for Manchester City, moving them back up to second in the table. And I was just curious from you guys, what did you make of De Bruyne's performance? And do you think this is kind of the doom prophecy that everyone's kind of seeing it as the return of De Bruyne and Haaland will just kind of settle this whole title race?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to reach that conclusion. I really do. I mean, it's one performance from Kevin De Bruyne, but it feels like maybe a sign of things to come. If they keep him fit, and obviously if they get Haaland back as well, then it makes it so difficult for everybody else, because I think those two players in particular just make them miles and miles better than everyone else. I was watching that Newcastle game yesterday, and actually Man City were doing what they do when they're at their least kind of effective, where there were lots of really good build-up play, opening up the space is fantastic, but just because they're not playing with like a conventional number nine, you just think, are they gonna get through? They really turned up the heat in the second half, obviously chasing the game at that point, and it just didn't look like they were gonna be able to break Newcastle down, because Newcastle was sitting deep by that point, not really offering much as an attacking force. And it's just, can you break that kind of low block down? But as soon as De Bruyne came on, it just puts a completely different complexion on the challenge, because he just opens up passing angles that no one else does. The number of times where he just kind of got played into little pockets of space, particularly out wide, and most players are just looking to dig a cross out, he's just like finessing a ball into an incredibly dangerous area and asking questions of the Newcastle defence all the time. His goal was obviously really well taken. Maybe that probably felt a little bit soft from a Newcastle perspective, because there wasn't a great deal of power on the shot. But how he kind of threaded it through the defender's legs, it was just superb. You don't see other players making that kind of angle from that position. And obviously the pass was sensational to win them the game. And there were two or three other moments where he's just taking up a position and just threading passes and just making it look so easy. And it's not just his ability either. It's his mentality. He's just obviously a really mentally strong player. And I think that's probably ultimately what will elevate City over some of those rivals. You know, Arsenal have got fantastic players, but they're young players, and I'm not sure they've got the mindset needed in the difficult moments. I think we've probably seen that in recent weeks. They're finding the strain of it a little bit difficult. Whereas, Kevin De Bruyne now and even Haaland to extent, the worry is for those other teams. that those players are gonna come back and that they're gonna be refreshed. You know, that is a real worry. And if you've got Kevin De Bruyne thinking, you know, I've got an 18-game, 19-game season here that I can attack with vigor, you know, and he gets back to anything like what he's capable of, because I still think he looks a bit raw. I mean, I saw him when he came on in the FA Cup last week, and I thought, oh, it's probably going to take him, you know, a little while to shake off some of that rust, because I don't think he's kind of what you call a natural athlete. So I think you can kind of see the pudginess in him, but his ability just counteracts that. So and he's going to get sharper and better. So yeah, to answer your original question, superb from Kevin De Bruyne, probably the best 20-minute individual cameo that anyone's made this season. And yes, I absolutely do think that if he stays fit. And, you know, Haaland to come back as well. Man City are just going to be better than everyone else.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. I actually didn't see City's game yesterday, even the highlights on Match of the Day. But I think it's, you know, most people who've watched them over the past few seasons know just how invaluable De Bruyne is to the way they play. I mean, even with the growth of Phil Foden and the contributions of Grealish, you know, in similar situations. So, yeah, I mean, De Bruyne's return, you know, gives them a huge boost for sure. But I think in terms of the edge on the title, I think I'll stick with what I said the last time you asked us earlier in the season, Kev. I think the title will still most likely be between City and Liverpool. Possibly Arsenal, although the longer the season goes on, it is becoming more entrenched that it'll be one of those other two. And again, I think a big factor is going to be those teams' respective cup runs and European schedules and how that affects their domestic fixtures. So I think all told, I mean, yes, De Bruyne is a huge plus for them. Having like every other team in the top 10, really, it's going to depend on the fitness of the key players that they can get back. So I think in a way, City were always going to be in the top two. I think that was always a given, no matter who they put out. But this could give them the edge. I think it's, again, City and Liverpool are the two favorites, and it's going to depend on their schedules, I think, towards the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Now I wanted to basically address the fact that we have passed the halfway point of the season while we were on break, although there are still clubs that have still only played 19 matches since we're in the middle of this new kind of winter break. But since we're at this air quotes halfway point, I just wanted to talk to you about the clubs that you support, what you've made of the first halves thus far, any positive or negative surprises to date. Just kind of catch us up on what's been going on within your clubs.
Yeah, well, it's ended very well for Wolves. Obviously, there's a certain recency bias because we reeled off three wins, consecutive wins over Christmas, three very good wins against Chelsea, Brentford, and Everton. And yeah, I mean that's put you know, a layer of gloss on our efforts. I think before that the feeling was, and I would guess it's the same from the outside looking in, that we've kind of exceeded expectations by not being right in that kind of relegation mix, because we had that fire sale in the summer and then a kind of disastrous you know, pre-season where the manager left before the first game. So you know, even to be, you know, up around sort of 15th, 16th was fine and well clear of the bottom three. And then we got those three wins and we're looking up the table. You know, our next game's against Brighton, and if we get a good result there, we're going to move into the top half of the table. So I think you'd have to give it a kind of A++ rating, you know, against expectations. So it's it's been fantastic, really. Probably, I would say our grade is probably, you know, as I say, if you weight it against expectations, we're probably one of the top performing teams in the league. So there's definitely a good feeling around the club. And, you know, I think what they did in the summer, it was trimming a big squad down, retained a lot of good talent still. We've got a lot of assets, which is important, because in this, with FFP, as we've seen recently, with even teams like Newcastle and other teams at the top struggling and having, you know, making acknowledging the fact that you need to sell good players to sort of trade well in the market. I think we've got a couple of 40, 50 million pound players in that team that may ultimately attract interest and allow us to be agile in the market too. So I think, you know, there's a lot to feel good about. And you know, the biggest surprise of the season is literally that, just how well we've done. I think if there's a disappointment maybe, it's probably that we, you know, the disappointment with the VAR decisions, which I know every club could say, but I feel we've probably had it worse than a number of clubs, and we probably should be a few points better off and already in those top half positions. But, you know, that can happen to any team. So I think we kind of just have to take that on the chin. But more, you know, things within our own control. I was disappointed that we went out of the League Cup in the way we did, because we threw away a two-goal lead at Ipswich. I know that seems like a kind of small thing, but, you know, if you're a mid-table team, you're looking at the cup competitions as an avenue to doing something special in a season. And I did feel like the League Cup and the FA Cup, which we're still in at present, offer good opportunities. So, and looking at how it kind of played out, and I know you can't say it would be the same, but, you know, Ipswich went on to lose to Fulham, and then obviously Fulham made it through, and, you know, they were playing effectively Liverpool's reserves, or, you know, backup team, and that seemed like a good opportunity in a semi-final as well. So you're thinking, oh, that could have been us if we'd you know, done a bit better in the cup. So I think that maybe that in the League Cup, but there's still a chance to remedy that in the FA Cup and potentially do something there. But overall, I certainly can't complain about the first half of the season.
Yeah, exactly the same. I heard a couple of weird stats today that I haven't been able to verify yet. I have to go and look them up, but apparently it's been 5 years since we won a game without either Kane or Son in the lineup. Also, we've now scored in 32 consecutive top flight games, something that we last did apparently in 1962 when we were defending champions. So, at this roughly halfway point of the season, and also with the Asian and AFCON tournaments going on, and with the various injuries that we've racked up over the previous weeks. I mean, Vicario is now our only ever-present player this season. So clearly, you know, there have been a bunch of challenges that are beyond the control of the manager or the team that have affected, you know, the performance this season. But I totally echo, I think, what Thomas said there about exiting the League Cup. I'm hopeful that I think Ange has learned something from that experience. But we're definitely, Kevin, I think, in a very positive transition period. I mean, our squad and manager will be encouraged by the way we're playing. We're not giving up, even when, you know, things are just turning to crap all around us. And I'm absolutely convinced that there's even better to come, and relatively soon for the squad. I'm also really happy about the average age of the squad and the way in which the collective identity of the team is evolving, and how they fight and play for each other. Couldn't be happier about the mood in the camp, the feeling within the squad. But when you think about it also, you know, when you ask, are you happy as a Spurs fan? Of course you're happy at the way we're playing. You know, given the past few seasons, no matter where we finish this year, I think we're entitled to feel proud about what the team has accomplished this year. We're far better than the past few seasons. And it's a no-brainer to say. And you know, you go back to when Ange was asked the other day about, well, are Spurs in the title race? Well, you know, technically we are. But I remember there was one time a few weeks ago you asked me, well, we couldn't, could we? No, I don't think we can. I don't think we can. But, you know, it's great, even in this first season where you're molding the squad together the way we are and still building it. That we're as optimistic as we are as Spurs fans that we're actually going to have something entertaining to watch every time we go to the park. So yeah, no, I couldn't be happier about the impact this season. And it when you think back when Ange arrived, you know, some of the flack that he was getting, you know, it's the a rerun of Martin Yall. You know, he overcame a lot of that. And the way he has inspired the squad to believe in the system and to believe in the way that we play now, especially in the wake of selling our most expensive player or our best player, has been remarkable, and I couldn't be happier. Or is that too enthusiastic, Kev?
No, I think it's pretty appropriate. Obviously, there have been some struggles in the past few years, but yeah, things certainly seem to be turning a corner, both in terms of player recruitment, management recruitment. I think I said on Twitter earlier this week that the best thing that could have happened to Spurs was Paratici being banned from football exactly when we were looking to hire a new manager, because the players he's recommended have been incredible. It's just, you know, yeah, the Nunos and the Stellinis, maybe a little bit less. And then going back to your point, Thomas, about how hard done by Wolves have been, yeah, only Liverpool have had more decisions go against them. So not too lucky for Wolves thus far, but obviously a pretty nice start to the season as well. And I don't recall if you said it before we hit record or during the show, but yeah, you probably should be in the top half if those had gone your way. We'll kind of continue this thinking about the midway point to kind of catch up on where we're at in the league these days and how we're feeling about some of the teams. So we'll look at where we think some of these clubs will likely finish come the end of the year. We were obviously just talking about Manchester City, and it seems like both of you think they're probably going to win the Premier League. But now that everyone's played each other at least once, is that kind of where we're thinking the title will end up going?
Yeah, for me, yeah. I think it's Man City or Liverpool. I think I'd just lean more towards Man City, because I just think they're a bit more complete than Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool look quite formidable at the moment, and I certainly wouldn't rule them out. They've just got so much firepower. They're such a dynamic team. I feel like they're really starting to look like that Jurgen Klopp powerhouse team again. So I certainly wouldn't rule Liverpool out, but I can't see past them or Man City. And I just think Man City, it's only injuries that'll stop Man City for my money. Because I just think they've got the mentality, they've got the experience in all those competitions at the business end of them to do very well. So yeah, Man City are my tip, you know, probably narrowly forcing Liverpool out.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that the title will still be between City and Liverpool. I don't know if having De Bruyne back in itself is going to be the tipping point for them. But certainly, I think it was always going to be between those two. It was a matter of how long Arsenal could stay with them. And I think we've sort of seen that that there is a gap emerging between those two and Arsenal.
All right, yeah, now we'll talk about the Champions League spots. Obviously, it could be four or five. We still don't know. If the season ended today, I'm pretty sure Germany would be ahead of England, and England would just have the four spots, but still a lot of football to play. But obviously, Newcastle and Manchester United doing the coefficient table, no particular favors there. But obviously, we're all saying City and Liverpool are going to be two of them. So who do you think might fill the other two and or three spots there?
I think the top four will be Manchester City, Liverpool, Arsenal and Tottenham. Those are the four sides, I would say. The only other team outside of those four who I think have a chance of making it are Aston Villa. But I just suspect that they might fall off a little bit at the end. And given all the injuries that Tottenham have had and the players they've still got to come back, they're still right there, aren't they? Of course. So combined with the style of play, it just seems to be working quite nicely. So I think over the run of the next 19, I would just probably expect Tottenham to just move past Aston Villa. That would be the only one. And then I think Arsenal are they're consistent in their performance. I just think what we've seen lately is you know, they're very controlled. I think they're the closest to Man City in terms of the style of play and the control they kind of have on games. And they've got a lot of really, really good players. But I just think they're just lacking a little something. I think it's experience and know-how. And I think a lot of teams have just worked out that if you just force them out wide to Saka and the other on the other side Martinelli, and you just kind of isolate those players and make it tough for them, then they're finding it hard to break teams down. So I think that's caught up with them. I don't like simplifying it to they've been figured out, but it is that a little bit. I think their style of play, it has become a bit more predictable than perhaps it was, and teams are coping with them better. So I think there's a challenge there for Mikel Arteta to try and solve that. And whether they do that through recruitment or, you know, just changing things up a little bit, I don't know. But I still think they'll make the top four. So, yeah, so I think Arsenal and Tottenham to join Liverpool and Man City, with Aston Villa just being a bit unfortunate in fifth, which may ultimately still get them where they want to be.
Well, here's hoping, Thomas, and thank you for that vote of confidence. I do think that, as I said earlier in the season when you asked, Kev, I think that fourth spot and possibly the fifth, if it comes about, was going to be between Villa, us, hopefully, and Newcastle, although they have gone off the boil a bit recently. And I do think, actually, that Chelsea have a chance of sneaking into that group if they pull themselves together over the next few years. And then the places underneath, I think, should be there for West Ham and Brighton. I'm still unconvinced by Man United, and as I said earlier, especially even more so after seeing them today.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. Then obviously there will be some overlap here, but which teams do you think will get the European spots, both for the Europa League and the Conference League?
Below them in the table, I mean, so who have I ruled out? Well, Newcastle I would expect to improve. I think if Newcastle are got all their players fit and they're playing to the level that they're capable of, they would without doubt be in that top four conversation. But I think they're like 9 or 10 points off at present, and their immediate prospects don't look brilliant. But I would certainly expect them to be, pushing that kind of sixth, seventh area as a minimum by the end of the season. Who else really? I don't know. I mean, you've got Brighton, Chelsea, Man United. There's not a lot to choose between those teams. Like I say, I think Newcastle are the best team of all of the rest of the teams. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably be inclined to say Newcastle for sixth. And then I think after that, my instinct would take me towards, I think Man United will do it. I think Man United will probably get seventh just because I think are they in seventh now? I think they're in seventh after today's game. And when you're factoring in how bad they've been, I think there's significant scope for improvement. I think they've got players to come back in. I think they'll have a patch in the season where they're a bit better. So I would probably just give them the edge for seventh. And I think Brighton just look a little bit like they might get weighed down by the European and the weight of fixtures and the comings and goings there. West Ham are consistent, very, very good team. I mean, they could definitely count themselves in that race as well. But I don't know. I just think Man United still have the quality for me. And I just think that they'll get it together for a run of games, and that will probably be enough just to push them over the top. So that would probably be where I would be leaning.
Yeah, that's very possible. But I think of what I've seen recently of both Man United and Chelsea, I think if I had to pick one of them to put a string of wins together to actually climb up the table significantly, I would probably go with Chelsea for now. It's as I say, we've mentioned Villa, we've mentioned us, mentioned Newcastle, Chelsea, Man U. I think it's going to be a tough ask, I think, for Brighton and West Ham to rise above the Europa League options, But again, I think we talked about it earlier. A lot is going to hang on the fixture congestion and the sort of schedules that they have in the run in to the end of the season. But I think of the teams that we've mentioned just there, everything. I think all the spoils are there to be divided up between them.
Gotcha. And we'll wrap up with the relegation candidates. Obviously, there was a period there where Everton sank after their FFP punishment came through, but currently outside of that area. So currently in the relegation spots are, as some people anticipated, all three of the promoted sides. Do you think that'll still be the case?
Yeah, that remains where what my instinct is telling me. Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United. Yeah, I mean, Sheffield United look gone to me. Burnley, I just don't see it. I just think they're too papery. Luton kind of have a bit more backbone with them, and they've got players like Townsend and Barkley who are turning the clock back a little bit bringing them some Premier League quality. They have a chance of staying up, but I just still think if you're talking a two-horse race between Luton and Everton, I just still think it's going to be Everton. I just don't see who else. I mean, I don't think it'd be Palace, so you Brentford and Forest, possibly, maybe. I think both of those. I think Brentford, if they didn't get some of the players back that have been out, they'd be in trouble. Because I think they're quite an ordinary team without, but they've got so many players to come back. Mbeumo, Vissa, Tony, obviously, and midfielders as well. I think they'll probably do it, but they could well get dragged into it and have to battle their way out. And they're only one result away from being caught by Luton. But one thing I would say is that in that kind of Christmas period, there was a lot of interactivity between Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United, where they were playing each other in that period, and I think that allowed for points accumulation. And I think Luton came out on top because I think they beat Sheffield United in a game they could have easily lost that game, and then they got that controversial point at Burnley. I think it's kind of giving a bit of a false dawn that those teams are going to suddenly do better, even though really just a lot of it has been playing each other. I know they've had some good individual results, but I can't see past the bottom three as it is.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think with each week's fixtures that go by, it's getting harder to look past the current bottom three and see who they could easily outstrip. Everton obviously are a special case because of the situation around the points deduction and whether or not that process is actually finished. But I still think they're a better team than the current bottom three. I suppose if you look at teams like Forest or Palace, you mentioned them there, Thomas, but looking at their goal difference, which I think is the biggest indicator of whether or not a team is actually in trouble. I mean, maybe they would be looking over their shoulder if they were to go on a 3 or 4 game slide, I guess. But I say it's really tricky, I think, for that bottom three, not just to sort of climb out by one or two points, but to actually overtake a team above them and stay in front of them. So I agree. I think we're looking at the three teams to go down.
Gotcha. Yeah, no real disagreements from me. And yeah, I think Everton are probably too good, as you guys are kind of saying. Tony coming back from Brentford, I think, is just a game changer for them. I am really curious about how the Nuno experiment works at Nottingham Forest, obviously post Steve Cooper, because that squad was very interestingly assembled. But yeah, and I don't really think anyone above that is really going to run into issues. Maybe Palace, but yeah, I don't really see that as well. I think they also have their own players to come back. And once Olise and Eze are all firing and stuff like that again, I think they'll be just fine. Cool. That's where we'll wrap up the first half of the show. Now we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back with club specific questions for each of our guests.
In the market for investment worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, and we are back. Thomas, we'll start off with you. Just a bit of a news story that had involved Wolves this past week was all this FFP talk, with some saying that you could be the next to kind of face sanctions, which was a little confusing to me as someone looking from the outside in, as I felt like that was the reason why you've run so lean the past few years, why you've sold some of your bigger name players. From your perception, do you think that FFP is still a concern for Wolves, or do you think you've kind of already handled it?
Well, the messaging coming out of the club is that it's kind of in the rearview mirror. The sporting director, Matt Hobbs, and I've got the article in front of me. He said, we dealt with the most pressing profit and sustainability issues during the summer in a positive and proactive way. So while Gary O'Neill knows we'll support him if we can, we're also not going to put ourselves in any danger whatsoever. So I think the message out of the club seems to be that we kind of had a close shave in the summer, but they did the work that was necessary to comply. And they feel that that's something that they want to be more self-sustainable, and they want that not to happen again. So I would be surprised if it came out that we were actually in trouble and facing the kind of potential sanctions that that Everton have been facing. So I don't think that will be the case. But unfortunately, as a fan, I can only deal with the information that's given by the club and trust that they've taken it in hand. So hopefully it's just kind of rumbling in the news stories. I think Wolves are due to release some accounts that are due to show a big loss for the year, and I think that's kind of what some of the news stories were pointing at. But obviously the accounts alone don't account for the profit and sustainability issues. You know, I know it can be distilled down, but it crosses over different time periods, and then you have amortization of contracts and all those complex matters. But I think it seems from what the club are saying that they don't feel it's an issue.
Gotcha. Very. That seems like it'll be good news for you. But as you say, we'll kind of all find out together when everything becomes official, if there are clubs that FFP will be looking to punish. In theory, very good news. You are only one goal away from having scored as many goals this season as last season. What has kind of changed in the attack? Although I do think we've talked about that already a little bit this season. Do you read into that more as this season being particularly good, or just last season being so abysmal when you obviously finished last in goals in the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, as I said to you off air, you know, it's more an indictment of how bad it was last season and the season before that. It wasn't working. We weren't creating enough chances, and the chances we did create, we had no one in there who was taking them. It was just the attack was never cohesive, and it never felt like we really knew what we wanted to do in open play. We had the hangover from the Nuno era. We still had the midfield from the Nuno era, really. You know, we had that Neves and Moutinho axis at the start of last season, and we were still expecting, even though we didn't want to necessarily sit back and defend and then counter-attack, which was obviously what we did so well in the Nuno years, we still had the dregs of that team hanging around. So it did need the kind of revolution that we saw in the summer. And what's happened is, and where the club have done very well, is they've sold a lot of players who on the face of it looked like key players, but actually I think most of them, if not all of them, had reached their sell by date at Wolves. And that's not to say they couldn't go on and do great things for other teams, but it just felt like the time was right for them to leave the club. So they've reinvented the team, and as well as, there's two factors that I would probably point to reasons why this team has been successful. The first is that the attacking players of Neto, Cunha and Wang have all been sensational. And at the start of the season, particularly when we had those three firing in tandem, you know, that front three is probably as good as anyone, certainly as good as anyone's in the bottom half, mid-table area of the team. You know, I think all three of those players, you could lift them out and put them in a top six team and they wouldn't look out of place. You know, I think so. We're obviously lucky to have those players still at the club. And also the midfield, you know, we had Neves and Moutinho, who were good technicians, good deep-lying holding midfielders. But that's not necessarily conducive to kind of attack-minded, proactive football. And having Mario Lemina and João Gomes in there, they're kind of two bulldogs who, they get around the pitch, they make a lot of tackles, they recover the ball high up, which then releases those you know, incisive, fast attacking players to get at teams faster in dangerous areas of the pitch. So I think that's why, you know, it's a style of play. And then on top of that, you've obviously got the influence of Gary O'Neill. He's obviously doing something right, and he's getting his ideas and his strategy across to the players, perhaps better than Lopetegui and Bruno Lage did last season. And you know, we're seeing the benefits of that. So I don't think it's just statistics as well. I think I don't know how much you guys have seen of Wolves, but I just think as on the eye, we just look a better, more fluid, proactive team now, you know, and I think that's the stats marry to what we're seeing on the pitch. If anything, we probably should have had more goals, really. Lots to feel good about, and hopefully we can improve the run rate even more over the second half of the season.
Yeah, well, certainly good luck with all of that, except against us, please. Steve, we'll come to you now to talk about Tottenham. And I just wanted to start with, obviously, a pretty high-profile match today. And we're just curious your thoughts on the match itself and your takeaways about where kind of Tottenham and Manchester United are right now.
That game between us and them today was almost like both teams' seasons in microcosm, you know. I really would like us as fans to get to a point where we don't say at the start of a game that we take a point. You know, I think we're in the situation where on our day we're capable of beating anybody, and we're getting better each time we play with a settled team. Somebody put it very well today when they said that if you look at the two teams, the two lineups today, Spurs and Man U, you know, Spurs are better than the sum of their parts, and United are not. United just don't use their cohesion to rise above that. So I think that's pretty fair. It would have been a good, entertaining game today if you weren't a supporter of either team. I think first half we didn't start until 10 minutes in, and then United did the same in the second half. And at that stage, I think neither team was really that much better than the other. It was a very scrappy back and forth. Both teams were wasteful. You know, we were unluckier, I think, in front of goal. Although in the second half, we definitely should have created more chances. But, you know, One thing, interestingly, coming back to, you know, Romero and Van de Ven back together in that back four also illustrates just how important Porro and Udogie are for us. Both of them, I think, had fantastic games today. But I think Bentancur was our man of the match. And apart from that pretty stupid yellow card he got for kicking the ball away. But, you know, he really is the engine that makes us tick in the midfield. Wonderful player. I think we're really starting to click, I think, and we're playing some great football, and the fans are responding to it. I watched the first half with my dad, who's a United fan, and as you know, and for him, of course, whoever the United manager might be is a mere shadow of what the team was under Ferguson. And then I walked home. All he did was complain for the first half hour. Or the first half. And then I walked home and listened to the last 20 minutes in the radio. So I actually missed our equalizer. But here's one interesting thing, Kevin, and I'm sure you picked up on this as well. What I heard at the end of the game was the silence from the United fans. You know, they weren't happy, but they weren't sure how to express it almost. Whereas you could hear the Spurs fans constantly through the game. I thought they were fantastic. So this is a very long-winded way of sort of saying that that's why I don't think United will be in the mix for the Champions League spots come the end of the season, or maybe even the European spots. They're a mid-table team at the moment, and they're definitely a work in progress, you know, both on and off the field, you know, with Radcliffe and Brailsford, you know, they're eager to get in and make an impression. So that dynamic between them and Ten Hag is going to be really interesting. And it occurred to me that maybe what they need is an Islands in the Stream sing-along like we get at the Spurs stadium.
Yeah, obviously agree with all of that. Do think Tottenham probably, air quotes, deserve to win today, you know, as much as football ever works that way. But ultimately, if you ask me at the start of the season, would I be comfortable or happy with 4 points off of United this year? I'd still say yes. And then the context of missing arguably 5 starting players today and still seeming to be the better team, still getting the draw, still arguably would have been the team more likely to win. I think all of those are things that you can't do anything but come away feeling pleased about, even though there are 2 fewer points than maybe ideally we could have had. Speaking of those 5 absent players, for people that aren't aware, Kulusevski out with illness, Son away with Korea, then obviously Basuma and Sarr both away at the African Cup of Nations, and Madison currently out injured. We've had all of these injuries, all of these absences. Obviously, Van de Ven missed, I think it ended up being about 6 weeks. Romero was supposed to miss 3 to 4 weeks, but suddenly popped up back today. But now that it seems like we're at least starting to get out of this injury crisis, still in touching distance of the title, I won't ask you again if we could, because you already addressed that earlier, just 5 points back from first place as we speak. But what do you take away from the fact that we were able to at least kind of keep pace despite constantly missing at least 3 regular starters from the team?
Absolutely. And I think the important thing there is the cohesion within the squad and the collective understanding of what the system's going to be and how we're going to play. I think you can't underestimate how important it is to have Van de Ven and Romero back in the middle of that defense. Although I think today there was a little incident towards the end when he came off, he had cramp, and I think that was a little worrying. But you know, also don't forget it's been nearly 3 months since he and Romero started a game together. And as you say, Kev, it's like in order to stay in touch with the leaders, if not, you know, actually compete with them, which I think we're not in that position just yet. A, you've got to be able to, you know, survive and get points when you don't play well. And thankfully, there haven't been too many games this season, even the games we've lost where we haven't played well. And the other thing is to be able to fill the holes in your squad. And obviously we have had more holes than we were expecting, I think, this year. So, it's kind of important that we understand collectively how to actually organize the team around certain players, but also in the collective sense, in the sense that, you know, we give them something to play for. I think on reflection also on today's game was that I think we missed Madison more than we missed Son or Kulusevski. Even I think Madison is more than those other players can unlock an opposing team, regardless of who they are. And as I was saying earlier, I think we now have the confidence within the squad that we can actually go and get a win or at least provide a good performance and be competitive, no matter who we're up against. But I think Madison is, I think, the key going forward to how creative we are as a team. And I don't think Lo Celso fulfills that same role, although it's actually a good option to have. So, yeah, it's a matter of making sure that whatever personalities you put in the positions, that they have a collective understanding of what it is we need to do.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I do think it's really promising for both Ange as a manager, the squad building that we've done, the players themselves, just how well we've been able to handle pretty dire adversity with the amount of injuries and suspensions and everything we've been facing. Next, we'll head on to Player Watch, where I just wanted to ask you what you've made of your club's January business thus far.
Wolves January business so far has been outgoing. I believe Fabio Silva has gone on loan to Rangers and Sasa Kalajic has gone on loan to Eintracht Frankfurt. So 2 number nines have gone out the door. And I think that means that we're all kind of expecting that a forward player is going to arrive before the month is out. There's a bit of surprise that we've allowed both of those players to leave, particularly with Wang out at the Asian Cup. We're quite light in options in those forward areas, and it is an area of the pitch that Gary O'Neill has specifically referenced that needs strengthening. I think he said he wanted a winger, someone in the kind of Pedro Neto mould, and a proper forward. So that's the area where I'm expecting us to do business by the end of January. And if we don't do that, I'll be a little bit concerned heading into the second half of the season whether that decision to allow those other two players to go out without bringing anyone in might come back and bite us. So we'll hang tight and see. But so far it's kind of, with only outgoings, it's quite hard to judge the business. But I don't think anyone's too disappointed that those particular players have gone out, because they just weren't being used by the manager. So therefore, you know, they might as well go out.
Yeah, I was very happy with the Spurs' two headline signings. We knew what the needs were and we addressed them. And I'm glad they both got onto the pitch today for different periods of time, obviously. Very satisfied with Werner's debut in its context. I mean, I suppose it wasn't really anything that we weren't expecting, but getting him, going out and getting him was actually a no-brainer given his Premier League experience and goal scoring ability. So I think today wasn't a bad test at all, considering it's been something like 20 months since he played in the Premier League, and I think he actually last started a game for Leipzig in October. So, very, very happy. The one thing, though, I would mention, though, on the strength of today's game, is that if we're intending to use Werner as a replacement for Son on that left-hand side, then we need to find a way to work the ball out to him on the ground rather than try to find him with crosses. And I think the players realized that as the game went on. As for Dragušin, or as the BBC pronounced him today to rhyme with Martin Sheen, Dragušin, I think like a lot of other Spurs fans, I hadn't seen him until the YouTube clips started to appear at the time of the rumors. But obviously we didn't see enough of him today. But I'm very encouraged, as you said at the top of the show, I think, Kevin, especially with the Juventus connection and the fact that he's familiar with some of the players there that we got from Juventus via Fabio Paratici. So, generally very exciting, I think, and helpful in squad building. There is one thing, and it's weird, and I don't think it'll come to anything. It's probably agent talk, but this Conor Gallagher story refuses to die, really, and I can't for the life of me see how it makes any sense, because either we're going to let Lo Celso go to Barca at some point and replace Lo Celso with Gallagher, but you would have to assume that, you know, anytime Madison's fit, he's your first choice in that role. So it's a difficult one. I actually rate Gallagher. I think he's a good player, and I think he did really well when he was at Palace as well on loan. So I wouldn't be distraught if we signed him, but I think it has knock-on effects I can't really see the logic behind it.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thinking is that, like, how Bentancur can cover two midfield positions, that in theory he could be either your air quotes 8 or 10, but we have so much overlap there. The only reason we're short of midfielders, as we saw in today's match, is because two of them are at the same international tournament, which isn't ideal. And then Kulusevski and Lo Celso are sick and injured respectively. So the odds that you'd ever be at a point like today are pretty low. So I agree. And if we have 40 to 50 million to spend, do you spend it on yet another midfielder? I don't know. It's hard to say. I think ultimately the decision is what's happening with Højbjerg. Then maybe you have more of a midfield spot to play with. But ultimately, I suppose time will tell. But yeah, I agree. I like what we've done thus far. Also, the signing of Werner in the first week of January is the fastest Tottenham have signed a player since Bongani Kamalo. I forget who I saw say that on Twitter and or X, whatever you call it these days. But that's a fun fact for you. And sorry to the person that said it for not being able to credit you.
I think it's actually Kamalo himself who said
that. Hey, remember me? I was signed earlier than Timo Werner in January. Yeah, could have been. We'll wrap up today, though, with a little bit of match previews, where we'll start off with you, Thomas. Obviously, as you're going to have a cup tie here pretty early in the week against the very same Brentford team that we talked about earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw a funny thing that was like, if this game had been played on Wednesday, Ivan Toney would be allowed to play, but because it was the Tuesday, he's still banned.
Oh, wow.
So it's quite a bit of a quirk there in the fixture planning. But yeah, I mean, with the players they've got out and home advantage, having earned that replay, having played most of the first game with 10 men, having João Gomes been sent off early in the game. I'd expect us, and I don't know if you were paying attention to the draw, but if we win this match, we've got a game against West Bromwich Albion, which is our big local derby. So there's a lot riding on the game after that draw was made for the fourth round. So our fans are dead keen to get through in this now, not just to progress in the FA Cup, but get that derby match against West Brom. And, that will add a little bit of spice to the season. So, yeah, I think we'll probably win. I think it'll be a tight game, but because we're at home, and I think Brentford needs another game like a hole in the head right now with the things they've got. I think they wouldn't be too displeased about exiting the competition. I think we'll probably edge it. Maybe 1-0 or 2-1.
Sure. Well, certainly good luck in that one. And then Steve, obviously we're going to be hosting Manchester City. A bunch of very fun stats about that. So we'll obviously get to how you feel about how these two teams will match up. But first, who do you think was more disappointed to draw the other team, Tottenham drawing City or City drawing Tottenham?
Oh, very good. I'm sure City were probably more disappointed with that draw than we were, especially the fact that it's away for them. But, you know, we have a relatively good record against them no matter where we play. So I'm very optimistic, very upbeat about going into that game. I think the key thing is going to be for us that if you believe the injury reports that Maddison will hopefully be back for that one. Whether he's 100%, we don't know, but certainly that's the intention. And since we've been singing his praises all night, at least we have him back on the pitch. And fingers crossed again, Van de Ven should be, I hope, back to full fitness. It was good to see him back today. But yeah, as I say, I'm very upbeat about this game. And I do think if we get past this one, you know, hopefully we can build a decent cup run this year that reflects somehow the excitement around the team, because I think it's really important. The fans really deserve something to shout about. And I know we're all enjoying the quality of the football and the commitment and the cohesion and all of that stuff, that, you know, we're playing really well, but actually winning something I do feel is getting closer. It's getting closer with every group of games that we play. So being able to, since we're not in Europe, being able to extend a cup run into the semifinals or whatever, and just see how far we can take it, I think is absolutely what the team needs right now, and the fans, of course.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why it was, kind of, as you're saying, disappointing on the Spurs side, is if Ange could solidify what has already been a terrific first season by being someone that could at least get a deep cup run, if not a trophy, in his first year, I think that would just lend so much kind of like credence to the project. Obviously, we're used to not winning stuff, but it'd be really nice if Andrew was able to do that early on in his tenure. Cool. We will wrap things up there. So if you guys would like to tell folks where they can reach you or anything you're working on, now'd be a good time.
Yeah, great to talk again, everyone. You can get me on wolvesblog.com. There'll be obviously for Brentford fans, a report from the Brentford Cup tie next week, and then some preview and match report action going on for the Brighton game, which is the game after that. And then I think we've got Man United after that. So, if you support any of those teams, as well as Wolves, obviously, it's worth checking out the site, reading some of the comments. People have normally got some interesting stuff to say on there. But otherwise, yeah, thanks for having me on, and hopefully come on again soon.
Yep. Thank you very much, Kevin. I really enjoyed our conversation. And thank you, Thomas, for a good chat. My name's Steve McGookin, and you can reach me at Steve McGookin on Twitter. In another life, my non-football writing you can find at statesofplayproject.com. And just before I sign off, I really wanted to say thank you to Franz Beckenbauer for being one of the most incredible players I witnessed as a young kid, and really gave me an understanding of that there's more to football than really just flair, if you know what I mean. I mean, he was reliable, he was secure, he was the sort of player that you would include in your starting 11 right from the off if he's available. So it was a joy to grow up watching players like that at the various World Cups. So thank you.
Yep, thanks to both of you for coming on as well. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter or X at Kevroff. And as always, you can email us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. But yeah, huge thanks again, Thomas and Steve, for joining me today. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.